Welcome to the Nova Scotia Artist Spotlight, presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust on CIOE. I'm your host, Bria McKinnon, a songwriter, pianist, and former Talent Trust Award recipient. And for this series, we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Talent Trust by interviewing some of the amazing, groundbreaking artists that we've supported here in Nova Scotia. You can listen here at 97.5 or stream worldwide online at www.communityradio.ca. On today's Artist Spotlight, we are featuring the amazing visual artist Charlotte Wilson Hammond, who I'll be speaking with a little bit later. But first up, Jane Archibald, a world-renowned soprano, performing major roles everywhere from the Canadian Opera Company in Toronto to some of the most celebrated opera houses and concert halls from around the world, like the Paris Opera, Royal Albert Hall in London, and Carnegie Hall. From our very own Truro, Nova Scotia, Jane Archibald, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for speaking with me. So first, I just want to know a little bit about you and your background. When did you begin singing? When did you know it was a passion that you wanted to pursue as a career?
Well, the singing started first, of course, as it does with most kids. It's a pretty natural thing. I think every kid does it, whether they grow up to have a talent or even be able to sing in tune. It's kind of just an organic, natural thing. So I definitely used to sing myself to sleep as a kid. My parents would talk about that. And our house was a musical one, and Truro is a musical town. So that love of music and singing was certainly fostered and encouraged right from the beginning. So I sang at home. My dad played piano by ear, and he played a lot. And I had a wonderful school music teacher in Mary Shepherd. And then I first started taking voice lessons when I was 11, which is quite young. And my teacher was Leslie Searle. So, I had a rich vocal, early vocal life.
That's amazing. And it's interesting that 75 years ago, the Talent Trust was actually founded to support another amazing singer from Truro, Portia White, who is a contralto who went on to study in New York, have this incredible career all around the world. So growing up, were you at all familiar with Portia, or had you heard her story?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, Truro is not such a big community that we don't know our local heroes. And yeah, her name was definitely ever-present and, in front of me as I was going on. And there's, I believe the Talent Trust even has an award named after her, which makes sense. And is well-deserved. So, yeah, she's a real inspiration.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's a small world that two singers from Truro went on to have such spectacular careers like yourself and Portia. So I saw that you were just performing in France last week. What sort of projects are you working on right now, or what were you performing in Lyon?
So Lyon was leading up to Good Friday, I was doing the St. Matthew Passion of Bach, which is just absolutely exhilarating, thrilling, incredibly moving music. That was the first time I had done that particular work. I've been waiting for it to come around, but as just the way with careers, sometimes I worked on those arias in university, assuming I would sing it, left, right, and center. I have the right voice for it, but sometimes your path just takes you in a slightly different route, circuitous route. So I was really pleased. I'm 42 to finally sing my first St. Matthew Passion in, and Lyon is a great, wonderful city, and I had great colleagues. So that's typical kind of concert gig for me. That's about a week long. You go, you rehearse for a few days, you sing several concerts, and you fly home. And the other part of my career is, of course, opera, which is usually a much longer time commitment in terms of the contract. It's usually around anywhere from 6 to 10 weeks long.
Wow, that's so interesting. So when you were growing up and studying, receiving scholarships from the Talent Trust, how did you envision your career? Did you know you wanted to start singing opera, do concerts and recitals? Or did you always imagine being a performer, or did you just kind of stumble into that?
Well, I think the first thing was the love of music. And I think people come at this career sometimes from slightly different directions. And there are people who love the showmanship, the being on stage aspect of things. They just take to it. They take to the limelight like a fish to water. Mm-hmm. And that part of it was not
my particular motivation. For me, it was just the very personal connection I had to singing and to music, and especially to classical music. It just touched me in a way that nothing else did. And so I knew that I had a deep passion and love for it. I didn't, you know, in my early years know exactly what that was going to mean. And I tried all kinds of things. I was in choirs and in the band and in the musical and did musical theater. But in high school, everything started to sort of come together. And I knew that this was a passion that far outweighed any other interests I had. I mean, I was a good student and took pride in being a good student. And I had a sort of other interests and English and history, but they didn't compare to my drive to be a singer. But I was still quite young and relatively reserved. I had a fair amount of experience for my age, you know, singing in music festivals and competing and that sort of thing. But I still wasn't someone who loved to sort of ham it up, so to speak. So I didn't have a lot of experience with opera at that point. I had a lot of experience, you know, singing concert repertoire, oratorio, arias from the Messiah or Bach or art song, you know, singing German Lieder or French Melodie and that kind of thing. But it's not like there's opera for kids in Truro or for kids anywhere very much. You know, it's not something I was heavily exposed to other than working on one or two simple arias from, you know, from Mozart, for example. So it wasn't until I got to university that I was exposed to opera. And you can't really know what you want to do, I don't think, until you've had a chance to kind of get in there and try it out. So I absolutely took to it once I got there, and actually found that I quite liked opera almost in some ways more than concert work, because I was allowed to be someone else on stage, and it was less vulnerable. I think the most vulnerable thing is to do a recital, or I'd say recital is probably the most vulnerable position for a singer to be in, because you're just there as yourself, and all of the interpretation is your own and you own it. But when you're on stage in opera, you have a director who's telling you what to do, you have someone else who's telling you what to wear, you have a conductor who's you know, depending on how collaborative, making choices about tempo and dynamics. And so it's a very collaborative process, and it doesn't all rest on you. And I really liked that, and I found it gave me a freedom to take risks and kind of discover new parts of myself that I hadn't been brave enough to kind of look at before. So I took to it, you know, in my undergrad, and my career sort of developed from there. You just have to kind of follow the path you're given. It's not a straight line for anybody. And for me, I ended up doing a lot more opera, and I'm working now to build more concert and recital work back into my career and find a balance there.
Oh, that's so interesting that it kind of came across your plate and you loved it, and now you're sort of looking back to your roots and where you started.
Yeah.
I would love to play a piece of your music now. We're going to play a track from your Juno Award winning album of Haydn arias. Excuse my pronunciation, but Al tuo seno fortunato. And then we'll have a little chat about that piece. Was that pronunciation okay?
Pretty close. Yes.
Okay. Well, let's have a listen and then we'll have a chat after that.
Oh, Community radio with a difference. Making a difference. CIOE-FM 97.5.
Welcome back. I'm Bria McKinnon. This is the Artist Spotlight presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust, and I'm speaking with Jane Archibald. So, Jane, you're so prolific. You've done so much performing over the past few years, but are there any dream roles or concerts that you have yet to perform and are on your bucket list?
Oh, well, I definitely have roles and music that's still on my bucket list because the nice thing about being a singer for most of us is that the voice continues to develop into your throughout your adult life. So repertoire that suits you very well in your 20s and 30s, sometimes either you can't sing it anymore because your voice has changed or you don't want to because you have grown, you know, you have a different set of life experiences and you're interested in singing other roles. So for me, it's the latter. I still have all of my high notes. I'm still very much a coloratura soprano. I can still sing Queen of the Night and Febi Mecca and some of these roles that call for extreme high notes. But I've been doing it for 15 years now, and I like a challenge. So I'm definitely looking to add new repertoire to my list. And the voice has expanded and grown and gotten bigger and warmer, so there's a lot more repertoire available to me at this point. Violetta from La Traviata is probably top of my wish list at the moment. I could name lots of them. I'd love to sing more Strauss. Strauss has always played a big role in my career, and I've sung a lot of the lighter stuff, but I just sang wonderful opera of his called Daphne. Very strange opera about a woman who turns into a tree. So very tricky one for the stage director to attempt to put on stage and make real and believable, but absolutely incredible music. So, I mean, I hope that the next, you know, the second half of my career, which is what I'm moving into now, will involve a lot more new music. And, you know, some of that will remain to be seen depending on how my voice develops and how it also depends on how other people hear your voice, the people who are in charge of hiring, you know, what they hear and what they would like you to do and what they would find interesting. So, but as far as venues, I mean, I'm just incredibly fortunate. I checked Carnegie Hall off the list last year. You know, what are the ones that everybody wants to do? You want to sing at all the main opera houses, and I've sung at pretty much most of them. You know, I've hit the Met and Royal Opera Covent Garden, London Symphony. I've never sung with the New York Philharmonic. That would be fun. I'd like to sing more in North America. I'd like a better balance there. So, and that's slowly starting to happen now that I have moved back to Canada and based myself here. My career, and this tends to happen pretty much to everybody. You get have your career takes off on one side of the pond or the other, and it's hard to sort of have it balanced. And mine took off in Europe, which was really wonderful because there are so many opera houses over there and so much opportunity, and financially the arts are better supported over there. So there was a lot of opportunity, and I have no regrets about that. But now that I live here and I have a family here and I leave my daughter at home when I go on the road, it would be nice to have some more work that's a bit closer to home. So I'm always happy when opportunities come up, you know, on this side of the pond, and especially, you know, to sing with the symphony here at home, because to actually go to work and then come home and sleep in my own bed is an incredibly novel experience for me. Not for most people, but for me.
Yeah, so that's amazing. You have a gig coming up at the Cohen on May 4th and May 5th. We were just speaking about it at the break there. So what music are you performing there, and who are you performing it with?
So it's a Mozart festival. There's piano concerto. That will not be me. I have talents, but they do not extend that far. But I will be doing a Mozart concert aria, which are arias that he wrote to be sung, you know, in concert, just like what it sounds like. They are not necessarily from an opera. So I will be doing that. I think that's in the first half. And in the second half, a fabulous masterpiece called The Mass in C Minor, which features four vocal soloists, which I've done quite a few times over the course of my career. And it's an absolutely thrilling work with wonderful music for the chorus and the symphony and the soloist. And I'm really pleased because my husband, who's a Mozart tenor of world renown, is inches from retirement quite happily, but his very last professional gig is going to be this one with me down the street in our, you know, in the town where we live. So that's kind of a really nice send-off for him. So it'll be fun for the two of us to sing together. We don't get to do that very often.
Oh, that's going to be so beautiful. And who are the other two soloists?
So Jean-Paul Descartes is the bass soloist, and Allison McCarty is the mezzo-soprano soloist.
Wow, that sounds like it's going to be a beautiful show. So I know it must be so inspiring and important for young Nova Scotian artists to look up to people like you really succeeding on the world stage and traveling, having all this success. So from someone growing up in Truro, Nova Scotia, to now one of Canada's most well-respected performers, what has been the key to your success, do you think?
It's hard to boil it down to one thing, but I think the thing that most people performing at my level all have in common is an unshakable belief in yourself, which is not to say arrogance or being immune to constructive criticism. That's all hugely important. But that no matter what happens and no matter what stumbles take place, no matter how many rejection letters you might get, that your response is not, oh, I must really not be good enough. Your response is, well, I'm going to go work on these things, but they just don't see what I have to offer, and I'm either going to come back until they see it, or I'm going to go and try my luck somewhere else, you know? So I certainly had my fair share of, you know, thanks, but no thanks, letters and responses, but I just, just kept putting one foot in front of the other. You know, when I didn't get into the young artist program of the Canadian Opera Company, and I did audition several times, I went, okay, well, that's not going to happen. I'm sure I'll be back, but now I'm going to go elsewhere. Okay, Canada didn't work. Maybe that was a blessing in disguise, because I'm going to, you know, shoot in a different direction. And I went and auditioned for the young artist program of the San Francisco Opera. And that, you know, led to a connection that led to another connection to another connection. And you can't know that in advance. You can't decide this is what I need to do to make it. You just have to keep constantly looking for the next step. And that's going to be unique for you in your path. But definitely a firm gut knowledge that you have something to offer and you are going to figure out how to make that work. But that is not, it's not up for debate that you have something to offer.
That's such great advice. I think it's easy to look at someone else's career and see only kind of the highlight reel, see the high points. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to hear that, you know, everyone has highs and lows and you just have to keep pushing through. I think your success is the proof that works. So, Jane, thank you so much for speaking with you today. This was really eye-opening, and I know you're very busy, so I really appreciate you taking the time.
It was my pleasure. I'm happy to do it. The Talent Trust was very good to me and supported me early in my career when I needed it, and especially, you know, in the early years, people do need that support. It's absolutely vital. It's an expensive endeavor to try and become a world-class performer. It could be any performer, but especially if you're aiming high, headshots and lessons and competition fees. So that support really helps. So I was happy to speak with you today and help in that way.
Amazing. Yeah, we're proud to have you as a Talent Trust alumni. So take care, and we'll speak to you again soon. And now we're going to listen to a beautiful piece of music sung by Jane Archibald with the Seattle Symphony Orchestra. This is Messiaen's Le Collier.
Thank you.
You're listening to CIOE-FM 97.5.
On today's Artist Spotlight, we're featuring an amazing visual artist, educator, arts advocate, and former Portia White Award recipient who also happens to be a board member of the Nova Scotia Talent Trust. So Charlotte Wilson Hammond, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you here today.
It's great to be here.
So first, I just wanted to learn a little bit more about you and your background, Charlotte. So when did you get into painting and when did you know it was your passion?
I think probably from a very young age. I always was the kid in the school who could draw, you know, she can draw. And I think when I was about 15, 16, I took a bunch of classes with my grandmother's, she also was a painter, but came to it later in life. And the instructor was a guy named Eric Goldberg, who actually has worked now in the National Gallery. And all the people were, you know, in their 60s and so on, but I went along, and we did these painting excursions to Tadoussac and you know, plein air and that sort of thing. And then I really wanted to go to art college, but my parents felt, and I was not an easy person, they felt I should have something to fall back on, dear. So they sent me off to secretarial school, Miss Shaw's School for Secretaries, which was horrible, but at least I can type, which is good. And then I had jobs from the time I was about 17, got married the first time when I was 19, moved to Indiana, and took I dropped out of high school, so in grade 10. And they have exams in the States where you can do a high school leaving certificate, which I got. And then I went to Indiana University for a year and did painting. And then had two little boys, got divorced, moved back to Canada. And by that time, I really knew, you know, what I wanted to do. Studied at the three schools of art in downtown Toronto and worked part-time. Then met my present husband, Gordon. Then we moved to... I had my first show in Toronto before we moved, solo show. Moved to Clam Harbour in the early 70s. And I just have been working away for the last 50 years.
Amazing. Wow, what a story.
Yeah.
So your most recent work, Invisible, was nominated for a Masterworks Award. Tell me a little bit about that project and what inspired it.
I think the project was inspired by the fact that I'm, you know, now 77, which seems like an unbelievable sort of age. And I don't know how this happens. It happens very quickly. And I find that with friends and other people that I've talked to, as women, we often are just not noticed as we get older. So, you know, you have to either dye your hair purple or do something outrageous to maintain your presence. And I was collaborating with a wonderful curator, Tila Kelman, who's since been in a dreadful accident and is now basically a vegetable, which happened during the project, which is really, really sad. But we had many great talks about it and proceeded with the work, which is they're large drawings on digitally printed Mylar. So what I would do was I photograph my shadow on various bits of landscape around Clam Harbour, where I live, had them printed, digitally printed, and blown up. And then I colored with colored pencil these things. So they're very ephemeral, and they give the illusion of just being sort of there and not there. And yet they're also very strong, so it reflects the strength that we still feel inside. Oh. That's kind of where the work came from. Okay. I did find a quote, which I still haven't been able to attribute. I heard it, I think, on CBC, and I've Googled it, and I can't find who said it, but it's, "My shadow rests lightly on the land, fleeting and ephemeral." And when I heard that, you know, it just gave me goosebumps, because that's exactly how I feel. We're here, and what do we leave behind? And, of course, that has connotations with the environment and all of that stuff too.
Wow, that is amazing, Cheryl. It's so beautiful. So it seems like you draw a lot of inspiration from not only the people around you, but the landscape and the scenery here in Nova Scotia. So tell me a little bit about that. Why did you decide to project these images over the land?
Well, it's interesting because over the years, as I say, I've used my own body in my own work, in my work, essentially years ago, because I was my most handy model. Coming here with the landscape so kind of vast and overwhelming compared to downtown Toronto, I started doing earthworks, works about the earth, and we do a lot of gardening, we grew our own food, all of that stuff. So that all informed the work. So it had to do with growth, death, and regeneration. And I think that's been a theme throughout, you know, my life, really. So the fertility of the earth, the fertility of the body, all of that sort of rolled into one. I see the landscape as a body, really.
That so, makes so much sense. Yeah, that you would tie the human experience to the natural experience because it's all
exactly.
It's all one. Can you tell me a little bit about when and why you got involved with the Nova Scotia Talent Trust?
Well, I think it's been at least 20 years. I know that I began as on the selection committee. It was just so wonderful to look at all the incredible talent, you know, I mean, in all disciplines. And it was also overwhelming that people who study and intend to become professional artists come away usually with a great deal of debt because, you know, as we know, school is all of that process is not cheap. And the Talent Trust was able to give awards and scholarships, but not to the extent that we would really like to. So when I joined the board, that process continues till today, which, you know, we really want to double our scholarship amounts and be able to make a meaningful contribution to these very talented people. I think getting an award or a scholarship from the Talent Trust, despite the fact that it's not a huge amount of money, also is very validating for those people who are successful. Just because, you know, our selection committee is a jury of peers, or not, you know, of professionals who are really have excelled in their own fields. So I think it all is very, very positive, but the bottom line is still the bottom line, and we're, you know, we hope to increase that money.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, and I know you're the namesake of the new Charlotte Wilson Hammond Award for Visual Arts.
Right.
So why did you think it was important to not only be a part of the board, but, you know, give some financial support yourself and start this award?
Well, in 2004, I won the Portia White Prize for visual arts and my advocacy. And that was a $25,000 prize, which was just bloody amazing. I was so thrilled. And part of that award is you give $7,000 as a mentorship or to some organization that is involved in the arts. And I chose the Talent Trust. So that's where the initial $7,000 came from. And that's, you know, I just thought it was really important to have a visual arts award.
Amazing. What advice would you give to young artists who are maybe just first applying for their first Nova Scotia Talent Trust scholarship or just starting out in their careers?
Pay attention to whatever application you're filling out. And your support material has to be just top-notch, you know, whether it's video or visual stuff or sound, whatever it is. Aside from the application process, I think artists know if they have to be artists. And I remember my son actually received a Talent Trust scholarship to go to the National Theatre School years and years ago before I even knew about the Talent Trust. And we asked him, you know, I asked a friend of ours who was an actor, and I said, you know, he wants to be an actor, and what advice would you give him? And my friend said, well, you have to say to yourself, do I have to be an actor? And if you have to be an actor, or you have to be a visual artist, or you have to be a musician, then you kind of know that's your fate.
Mm. That's amazing advice. I think that's very true. Mm.
But I think it's the passion that... passion, energy, and commitment is what it is.
What you need.
Yeah. I think it's so important. There's so many charities, not for profits, trying to find money. And I think sometimes the arts do get lost because there's so many other things going on, you know, healthcare, the environment, which is just appalling. But I just guess that I would hope that people can see the intrinsic value of the arts, because the other economic value is it, there's this incredible spin-off. I mean, one artist does a small thing, and, you know, then you have that huge economic benefit. But the bottom line is the intrinsic importance of the creative process and what it can bring to everybody.
Exactly. I completely agree. So since this is a radio show, I have one last question. Is there any piece of music that inspires you when you're creating art?
Well, the Avro Part piece, which the Alina, it has this wonderful contemplative feeling. And I think I try and there's also a passion, an underlying passion, which I detect in that work. And it just puts me in this great space. Oh, what's his name? T.S. Eliot said, the still point of the turning world, there the dance is. And it's that still point, it's that quiet space that you need to be in order to then dance or sing or create.
Wow, that is beautiful. And that's so true, because when you're listening to music and working on a project, you want something that complements but doesn't distract.
Yeah.
It just kind of brings you to that higher level.
Yeah.
And then sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, the Amy Winehouse piece, what inspires you?
Well, it's
that?
Exactly the opposite. It's the pain. You know, after the first time I heard it, I think we were in Mabu, and I heard it, the only station we could get was FXFM, okay. 99 point whatever. And this came on, and this was years ago, and I just was very drawn to her voice and her pain and her passion. And as an artist, I think artists feel, everybody feels pain, of course, but she was able to express it in such a poignant way, and then, of course, her terrible ending was a culmination of all that. Mm-hmm. Pain that she must have gone through, but it was true, you know, you felt it wasn't just gratuitous, and I think that's what I why I like her work. You really feel that it's coming from a real depth of soul.
Yeah. And that's such a great way to honor her musical legacy by creating new art.
Yeah.
Inspired by what she does as
yeah.
well. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Charlotte, so much for coming in and speaking with me today. This was a real pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure too.
And the rest of the Nova Scotia Talent Trust board were part of organizing the First You Dream art exhibit, which is celebrating 75 years of the Nova Scotia Talent Trust and opens at Mount St. Vincent Art Gallery on May 25th at 2 p.m. This exhibit will also travel during 2019 to the CBU Art Gallery and Art Gallery of Nova Scotia Western Branch in Yarmouth. Thank you so much for listening to the Artist Spotlight presented by the Nova Scotia Talent Trust. For more information, or if you're an artist who might want to apply to the Talent Trust, go to www.nstalenttrust.ns.ca or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at NS Talent Trust. Special thanks to CIOE and our producer Ron James, as well as Music Nova Scotia, and our theme music is The Great Karoo by Will Fisher.